We're at the end of a series on the family. In the last month, we covered two lessons on marriage with the Song of Solomon, and then four lessons on raising and rescuing our Christian children. Then we had two lessons on the church family last week. And in order to round everything off, we're going to have three more lessons, one this morning, one tonight, one next week, on the on marriage and the relationship we have in it. Now, recently I read an old but a great book called The Love Languages, The Five Love Languages, by a religious family counselor named Gary Chapman. I read that book before a number of years ago, and somebody gave me a copy of it because somebody borrowed mine, and so I reread it. I really like that book. The publication analyzes how couples must learn to express a heartfelt commitment to each other in order to make the marriage work. Now, though the Bible is always the first source that we appeal to, that's always my motto, I think we'd be fools not to look at other sources of information that people have, as long as they have based it on the Bible themselves. And that's why I wanted to cover the five love languages this morning, because I found the information to be very beneficial over the years. And the second time that I read it, over the last couple of weeks, I found it to be even better. And so that will be what will be accomplished here in the next three lessons. We'll be covering the five love languages of marriage. Now, I do not know if you have noticed, perhaps I'm the only one paying attention. I doubt it. But have you observed that marital bliss, that it starts to wither a couple years after the wedding? Okay? Am I the only one who noticed that? See, husbands, your why is not amening that, because that could get you into trouble. But the typical Christian marriage starts out with a man and a woman deeply and emotionally attached to each other. And the couple in the early stages of the relationship typically spends a lot of time together. They like to hang out together. They just have this bliss about it. And I remember when Jana and I were first going out together, we spent many hours on the phone. It was incredible. And I didn't think you could talk with anybody that much. We talked 3, 4, 5 hours at a time on the phone. And it wasn't long distance, praise God, or I'd still be paying that off. But there was actually one call where I got off of work at like 10:30 at night, and then I called Jana, and we were talking, and we talked until I had to go to work the next day. And I didn't get any sleep that day. But that was okay because we were in love. We talked and talked and talked. And the courting and the honeymoon stage of the relationship, that's what this is describing. And according to research, that lasts about 2 years. Then after those 2 years are over or less, the mask begins to slip some, doesn't it? And but during those 2 years, we could do nothing wrong and everything right, so we thought. We couldn't wait to talk to each other, see each other, learn more about each other. We were married, and in a couple of years, that changed. I used to talk to her for hours on end, but now it diminished to a few quick words on a busy day. In the beginning, we ate ramen noodle surprise by candlelight. We did that one time, okay? But after a couple years, it diminished down to the 99-cent quarter-pound double stack with cheese from Wendy's at a drive-thru. We went from not being able to spend enough time together to the not spending that much time together at all mode, especially when you throw kids in there. Our relationship began to become very much like most relationships do in marriage. It goes from hot to cold. You see, if you don't actually actively try to make the relationship good, it's just not going to default by that. Revelation 2, verse 4 and 5, "But I have this against you, that you have left your first love. Remember, therefore, where you have fallen, and repent and do the deeds which you have done at first." You know, in many of our relationships, whether they be with God or other human beings, or even in our marriage, they start out very hot, and they tend to go to cold if you're not careful. I remember when I became a Christian, I was so excited. I went over the next day and I told my mom, "Yeah, I became a Christian last night. This is great." She says, well, yeah, you enjoy it now because it'll wear off." But it didn't. I ended up going to preacher school and everything. But that's what we expect. Hebrews 2, verse 1, "For this reason we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard, lest happily we drift away." Luke 8, verse 13, "When they hear, receive the word with joy, but have no firm root. But for a time, they believe for a while, but in time of temptation fall away." You know, everything goes through the second law of thermodynamics, if you're not careful. And even our faith can do that. And in an early marriage of a man and a woman, they're still in discovery mode. But once this is over, the newness of the relationship begins to wear off. That is a fact. And once this happens, it's extremely important to have a good communication structure in the relationship. Dr. Chapman proposes and uses in his counseling practice that there are five love languages that make up human relationships, particularly in marriage. He says that these five languages are the glue that holds the marriage together. The five love languages, as discussed, are very scriptural. They hold a biblical perspective, and they are the following. Number one, words of encouragement. Number two, quality time. Number three, gifting. Number four, acts of service. And number five, physical touch. Now, when we start out, we speak all five of those languages when we're in that dating mode. That's how we are. We are multilingual when we start out dating. We're in the courting mode. We tend to try all these different languages. In the early dating courting mode, I mean, we're just like, boy, we are just masters at speaking all five, aren't we? Put our best foot forward. Think back to when you first dated your spouse, or maybe you're dating someone right now and you're going to be married. You're already speaking that. These languages. Words of encouragement. You say all those things that gave him joy. "How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. That's what I like about you." You know, we say all those things that just make him happy. Quality time. "You could not spend enough time with them." Calling on the phone, going to movies, church events, or on dates. You hung out all the time. Gifting. "He bought you flowers, candy, and other gifts. She bought you those itchy turtleneck sweaters and those caps." I don't like turtlenecks. I'd just as soon wear a saw or something. Acts of service. "You couldn't wait to serve one another. If her car broke down, you were there to fix it. The sink was leaky, you were there to fix it. If you were hungry, she couldn't wait to make you a meal. And she'd use all that fancy food, too." Physical touch, you enjoyed the physical touch of holding hands, sitting on a park bench, holding each other in one another's arms. I mean, we did all that. I mean, when we started out, we go into all five languages when we're trying to get that spouse to be. We're multilingual. We put our best foot forward, wanting to win the heart in the relationship. We spoke all five languages, not wanting this catch to get away. Well, it's by this means that we win the heart of our spouse. And by default, because you spoke all five love languages, you're going to hit the one that's most important to them. But after that relationship cools off, we default back to what our favorite language is. And this is where the problem comes in. Now, we've been speaking multi-languages for a couple years, and all of a sudden, we go back to our favorite, And that's what I see as a minister when I've counseled couples, that there's a language communication barrier. I can't tell you how many times I've heard from people, and I even said it myself, struggling in their relationships. They'd say, he used to buy me all those gifts. Oh, he used to get me flowers all the time. She used to love to spend time with me. He used to write poetry and give me cards. She used to love to hold me. He used to like to help around the house. You hear all these different lack of communication scenarios going on. And oftentimes, it's an indication of the neglect and lack of communication of that person going back to speaking his favorite language. And that's why it's so important to know what your spouse's love language is. Because if you don't know it, you could be not capitalizing on the closest relationship you can have. For example, you know, we had this cat, Jesse, and he used to try to get outside, and you know that saying, that's what the cat drug in? He'd always bring us offerings of moles and birds back. He'd lay them right down there on the mat. Just like, he would just lay them out there like, wow, thanks, Jesse. We appreciate that. But, you know, I don't know if that's what the cat's intention is. If that's what it is, oh, bless that little cat's furry heart. Okay? But, like, I didn't keep any of those moles. Okay? The birds, they didn't do anything for me. That cat would beat them up bad, too. But see, that's what happens in a marriage. For example, if somebody doesn't have, if somebody has a love of gifting, but the other person, you know, they're not receptive to that. The flowers and the cards and the little presents, they don't mean as much. But if you speak their language, then that means all the more. So we're going to cover words of encouragement this morning. And tonight we'll cover the next two. But this is to help us make the transition from working hard to working smart. And everything we do, we start out working hard. And then we learn more, and then we start refocusing and working smart. Because we have the same amount of time every day. It's what we do in that same amount of time that makes a difference. Let us cover the five love languages through the eyes of the Bible and learn to work smart instead of hard by learning to speak fluently the love languages of our spouse. Words of encouragement. The word encourage is really a neat word. It means to inspire courage in someone else, to inspire courage. Encourage. I'm going to put courage in you. Because there's a lot of things that scare us in life. But if we can help put courage in them, then they could face it. That's what it means. And we as Christians have an obligation to inspire courage in one another. This was an extremely important language used in the early church. Just like that verse that Brother Buck read, though I speak in the tongues of angels and have not love. You know, I know that's talking about the miraculous gifts, but it's the same thing in the sense that we have to learn to speak the right language to people. And the encouraging was huge in that first century church because they were being persecuted. You know, it wasn't, if you think it's not popular to be a Christian today in America, it was much less popular in Rome in the first century and definitely in Jerusalem. The first few years of Christianity there. And so the church, you see individuals inspiring courage in them to press on, to keep on doing what they need to be doing for God, to stay faithful. Tychicus was sent to encourage the Colossians. It says in Colossians 4, verse 8, "For I have sent him for this very purpose, that you may know about our circumstance, and that he may encourage your hearts." The Colossians were going through some problems. Here's a man, he's going to put courage in you, because he's good at it. Timothy was sent to encourage the Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians 3, verse 2, and we sent Timothy, our brother and God's fellow worker in the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you as to your faith, to install courage in you. Barnabas, he was a master at that. He was called the encourager. He encouraged the saints at Antioch. It says in Acts chapter 11, verse 23, and then when he had come and witnessed the grace of God, he rejoiced and began to encourage them all with a resolute heart to remain true to the Lord. Oh, there's much to be said about someone who's good at installing courage in others. Because if there's ever been a time in America for people who are growing weary, we're in it now. You know, the Thessalonians were instructed to encourage one another. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11. Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another just as you are doing. Keep doing that. Keep reminding them of the hope. Keep encouraging them to participate in activities with one another. This is a love language that we must be willing to speak among ourselves. Now, not everybody is going to be super responsive to this, but we still have an obligation to encourage, to help build courage in people. Hebrews 3, verse 13. Encourage one another day after day while it is still called today. Hebrews 10, 25 says, but encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. We are charged with building up courage in individuals. That is an obligation we have in the church family. We are always needed to be willing to encourage another church member. But I want you to know that this is my natural love language. You know, I've studied all five a couple times. This is the one that always stands out to me. I've always liked to lift the spirits of others who are headed down the wrong path, someone who's about to give up. I love being able to have them turn back and to give them strength from the scriptures to keep pressing on, to finish the race, to keep that faith. That's why I became a preacher, because I loved encouraging people to do the right things. It discourages or removes courage from me to see someone give up on their faith, to see someone not living up to their potential. I don't know if you've noticed that about me, but it drives me nuts when I see somebody wasting their time and not serving the Lord. Because I know at the end of the day, they're not going to be happy. And if they're not happy, they won't have joy. And if they don't have joy, they may give up. And I can't live with that. I must tell you, the primary reason I've stayed here so long is because you've done a very well job in encouraging me. You have. I can think of at least 20 members while I was preparing this lesson that I received an encouraging card from in the last 5 years. A lot of those I keep. Because there's a lot of times you don't know if you're making the difference. But then you get a card in the mail, or I can think of 40 people who've called me or pulled me off a site and put courage in me. I may not always let you know that. But I'm letting you know now that this is one of the reasons why I'm still here. Because I need encouragement. That's my love language. I'm working hard for the church, and sometimes if I forget, you know, in the midst of the troubles, one of you comes along and you give me a card and you say, hey, I really appreciate the job you're doing. I keep it. You know, I keep a little card. I preached a sermon for my senior sermon down at Sunset. Clyde Payton, a man who I very much looked up to. He started Sunset. He was a missionary in Italy and in Denmark. I mean, just a wonderful individual. He just passed away about a year ago. But when I preached my senior sermon, he wrote on this card, don't you ever do anything but preaching. Preach the word, brother. He wrote it on the back of his business card. and I laminated that card. And I keep it with me. Because at times where I might think of giving up sometimes, I pull that card out. Or I'll pull one of your cards out. Or I remember something one of you said. And I get my courage back. It's even more important in a marriage. It wasn't until first reading about it here that this love language stood out to me. My wife has, for the most part, been pretty good about this. She often encourages me as her husband, the father of our children, and as a preacher. And if I don't receive encouragement from her after preaching on Sunday, I feel kind of empty. She'll tell you this, it's common for me to ask her after church, did you enjoy the lesson today? Did you enjoy that? Because I want to know if she enjoyed it. Because, like, I live with this woman. And I don't want to discourage her. I want to encourage her, but I need to know. The kids will confirm that. I always ask, did you follow what I said in the lesson? You know, it's common for me. You know, she showers me with encouragement all the time. Oh, it's okay. You're doing fine. You're working hard. And the kids will vouch for me on this. It's really funny, but sometimes if I don't feel like I'm being encouraged enough, I'll say, Jana's laughing at this. She knows what I'm going to say. But I'll say to the kids, yeah, Mom always said I'd never amount to anything. And the kids say, no, she didn't. And then Jana will give me some encouragement. That's a game we play. Okay? Mom always said I was a loser. I never amount to anything. But I never understood how we got to that point. But there are many people out there who need encouragement. That's their love language. And because they're out there giving that, they need it replaced. Is this your love language? Do you long to be loved in this way? What happens in a marriage when one of the spouse's love language is words of encouragement, and they're not being loved in that way? You can give them flowers. You can spend all the quality time in the world, but if you don't put courage in them, they may not have the joy that they could have. I want to tell you a story. Allison always liked to write. Later in her college career, she took a few courses on journalism. She quickly learned that her excitement about writing exceeded her interest in history, which had been her academic major. It was too late to change majors, but after college, and especially before the first baby, she wrote several articles. She submitted one of the articles to a magazine, but when she received a rejection slip, she never had the courage to submit another. Now the children were older and she had more time to contemplate. Allison was again writing. Keith, Allison's husband, had paid little attention to Allison's writings in the early days of their marriage. He was busy with his own vocation and caught up in the pressure of climbing the corporate ladder. And in time, though, Keith realized that life's deepest meaning is not found in accomplishments, but in relationships. He had learned to give more attention to Allison and her interest. So it was quite natural for him to pick up one of Allison's articles and read it. And when he finished, he went into the den where Allison was reading a book. With great enthusiasm, he said, I hate to interrupt your reading, but I have to tell you this. I just finished reading your article on making the most of the holidays. Allison, you are an excellent writer. This stuff ought to be published. You write clearly. Your words paint pictures that I can visualize. You have a fascinating style. You have to submit this stuff to some magazines. Do you really think so? Allison asked hesitantly. I know so, Keith said. I'm telling you, this stuff is good. When Keith left the room, Allison did not resume her reading. With a closed book in her lap, she dreamed for 30 minutes about what Keith had said. She wondered if others would view her writing in the same way that he did. She remembered the rejection slip she had received years ago, but reasoned that she was a different person now. Her writing was better. She had had many more experiences. Before she left the chair to get a drink of water, Allison had made the decision. She would submit her articles to some magazines. She would see if they could be published. Keith's encouraging words were spoken 14 years ago. Allison has numerous articles since then and now has a book contract. She's an excellent writer, and it took the encouraging words from her husband to inspire her to take the first step in the arduous process of getting an article published. We have a great power to encourage others, particularly if that's their love language. You know, I used to like mowing lawns. That was a business I did as a teenager. And I didn't get encouragement a lot from my family. But there was something that always puzzled me, though. Whenever I would mow the lawn, there was a lady, Mrs. Zender. She was my fourth grade teacher. I would go out and mow her lawn, and she would always come out about halfway done with the lawn. And she would say, "Boy, you're doing a great job, Doug. That's a really great job you're doing. I love it when you do my lawn." And you know what? I couldn't stop thinking about that for the rest of the lawn while I was mowing it. And I didn't really understand, you know, why am I dwelling on this while I'm mowing this lawn? Because that's my love language. And what was really neat is I never forgot Mrs. Zender. In fact, just a couple years ago, she died. But I actually went to go see her in the nursing home shortly before she died. And she remembered me. She didn't look the same. This is like 30-plus years. But she remembered me. And I always remembered how she encouraged me. If this is your spouse's primary love language, there are many ways that you can speak it to them. Write a card. Tell them why you appreciate them. Don't give them fluff. Don't say, "Wow, you're great." Maybe explain that. Maybe explain why you appreciate that. Write a poem expressing your appreciation for your spouse. Compliment them many times a day. Praise them in front of your children and others. Memorize encouraging verses from the Bible and say it to them. It may not come naturally to you at the beginning. Maybe you're not an encourager, but it will come easier down the road. Because when your spouse is happy, aren't you happy too? When they're suffering, don't you suffer? Didn't you become one when you were married? When your spouse begins to open up to your encouraging words and grow warmer to you, then you will want to speak it more often. I shudder to think about all the marriages that could have been saved because someone was starved for encouragement. They would have just said, "I really, really appreciate you. I think you're doing a good job." I've known many husbands and wives. That's all they needed. But they never got it. You're the one in control of your own actions. I suggest you try to find what your spouse's love language is and begin to speak influently. Because if you don't, you won't have the marriage that you want. Make sure that you speak this language fluently to meet your spouse's needs. Tonight, we're going to cover quality time and gifting. Those two love languages. And the next week, we'll cover the final two. But as an encourager, I would like to encourage you to make the right decision this morning. If you're not on the right path, if you have wandered from God, if you haven't lived for Jesus this week like you should, get back on track. He's willing. He's waiting. He deeply desires you to turn to Him. And if you're not a Christian, if you've never entered the covenant of a life of sacrifice unto Jesus, second only to His sacrifice to you, if you believe that He's the Son of God, that He did die for you, that He was buried and was resurrected as an historical fact, and that confirms Him the Son of God, Romans 1:4, and you want to commit to Him the rest of your life, I encourage you this morning to come forward while we stand and sing.